Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Deadhead Cannabis Show. My name is Larry Mishkin of the Hoban Law Group, and I'm here today with my co-hosts, Jim Marty and Rob Hunt. We have a very special guest today, Andy Greenberg of Society Jane in San Francisco. Andy was our very first guest on this podcast a while back, and now that we've exceeded 100 shows, hard to believe, Andy has been kind enough to say that she will join us again today and share more of her wisdom on Northern California and marijuana and what's going on with that. So we've got lots to talk about, lots of interesting stuff on the music side, Bill Kreutzmann's 75th birthday coming up, Trey Anastasio loses his John Conn in Tony Markelis, very sad about that. And if time permits, Jim Marty was at the 80th anniversary of Red Rocks last week. So all very good. Rob, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Larry. Lots happening in cannabis this week. Lots happening in Grateful Dead world. And really excited to hear Andy tell about her story in San Francisco. So this should be a really fun show.
Wonderful. Jim, what about you?
Very good. Yep. Well, we might want to touch on Dick's Picks 38. I listened to it extensively over the weekend. And 73 is a standout year. Very interesting show because it was the first time some of those songs have been played publicly, or at least one of the first few times.
It is. It's a tremendous release, and I was lucky to grab it right before I headed out of town for a few days here, so I've been able to listen to it, and it really is outstanding. Another good one that they released, so let's get to that. But start us off, Jim. There's been news in the world of 280E, unfortunately, maybe not the kind of news that we want to hear.
Yes, the IRS remains undefeated in its enforcement of IRS Code Section 280E. Which denies deductions outside of cost of goods sold to cannabis businesses. I fought the law, and the law won on that one. I testified in tax court very early here in Colorado, and you lawyers know what a Daubert challenge is, and the IRS raised a Daubert challenge. The judge let me testify and then invoked their Daubert challenge. So, as I said, I fought the law, and the law won. But the IRS remains undefeated. Harborside's case was turned down by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. And then another California case, which, Larry, help me with the correct citation.
I don't have the citation, but I do know that the parties were Organic Cannabis Foundation and the Northern California Small Business Assistance.
Very unfortunate. The Court of Appeals turned it down because they had filed their papers late. They took it to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court agreed with the Court of Appeals that, yes, those papers were filed late, and we are not going to hear your case. So I've been saying for some time that the only change that's going to come to 280 is going to come through Congress, House, Senate, signed by the President. That's the only way we're going to get 280E, and that's going to include a very broad discussion of a federal excise tax. So I think we're several years away. So in the meantime, we need to keep planning around 280E and minimize the non-deductible costs so that companies like Andy's here can be profitable on an after-tax basis.
Well, and, you know, Jim, the thing that really jumped out at me when I was reading about those cases was not just the amount that these parties owed in taxes, which was huge, but the amount of penalties that were already being tacked onto them. So, you know, I mean, I guess for Harborside, that's kind of how they've, you know, made their reputation, right? Being the guys who were willing to take that risk in the name of goodness for everybody else in the industry. But, you know, for these other two companies, the Organic Cannabis Foundation, with their taxes plus their penalty, they're almost at $1.5 million that they're going to owe. That's, and you file a day late, that's not good. That's not good.
Yep, a million here, a million there, and pretty soon you're talking about real money. Now, I have had success at the field agent level on negotiating away the penalties, which brings down the interest.
Sure, I guess if you can, you know, pay off the rest of it, maybe if you're lucky, you can if you can get that. But you're right, it does add up to a lot. But, you know, given what's going on in the industry, maybe it's not surprising. And Rob, you were going to tell us about a new deal that's going down right now.
Well, not a new deal, more of just a congratulations to Ascend Cannabis and to Abner Curtin and his team for taking a business in just several years and being, you know, one of the larger kind of public listings that's happened this calendar year. There aren't too many MSOs that are still coming out, and I think Ascend is one of them, and I think we're expecting to see PharmaCann come out later this year. So, you know, it's one more company that's been pushing, you know, around $1 billion market cap. So, again, good for the industry to see another business that's that big, that's, you know, really attracting real dollars. And so just congrats to the Ascend team for getting across the line. And there's one more, you know, mid-tier MSO that's now out there in the public domain.
Wonderful. Always good to hear about. You know, successful businesses are the key to the industry. And speaking of successful businesses, let's turn our attention to our guest, Andy Greenberg, who is here today. Andy, so nice to have you back on our show. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Larry. It's lovely to be here.
What's going on with Society Jane? Tell us what's new.
Oh, what's new with Society Jane? Well, having just paid our federal taxes, I have a particular feeling in my heart about 280E, and still, for the life of me, don't understand how we are in a situation of taxation without representation, when that seems to be what this country was actually built on. So it's very frustrating.
Spoken like a true attorney.
But on the business owner side of things, we're doing great. You know, we were deemed an essential business early on during COVID. And so that's been, it's been nice to be able to get out of the house, and it's been nice to be able to sell new products as well as the ones that people have grown accustomed to, as the supply chain, at least in California, was also deemed essential. So we've been able to onboard a lot of interesting new things, like the Garcia Handpicked brand, which we're all very, very fond of, and seems to be gaining traction throughout our customer base. We're getting a lot of new people, not just women, but a lot of people who are really interested in the Garcia brand. So that's been great for us.
And just really quickly, for maybe some of our listeners who don't know you, just give a 30-second kind of overall view of, you know, what Society Jane does and what your focus is.
Got it. So Society Jane started in 2015 as a collective, which was the entity available to us at that time, pre-adult use. And we were essentially an educational party provider. We would take the entire store, everything we were selling, and go to people's private homes and conduct sort of Tupperware parties for cannabis. We would do education, people would invite their friends, and we would tell them all the basics about cannabis, THC versus CBD, what does indica mean, all the, you know, the basics that we sort of forget about having been in the industry for so long. And then people would have a chance to shop, and they could go home satisfied because they could take home whatever they bought, they could take it home and try it that night. After legalization occurred in 2016, we had to segue because there was no license category for what we were doing. So we became a non-storefront retailer. We are essentially a delivery service now. We continue to do educational parties, but because of the way the regulations work, we can no longer have people buy directly at the parties. They have to place an order at the parties for next day delivery. And of course, all parties have been curtailed during COVID. So we've been delivery only, essentially. And our focus is on women grown, women made, and products that women like. And so we try everything, we vet everything, we curate a menu of products that we would use or that we think our sisters would use. And that seems to have worked so far.
I could ask a couple of questions on the delivery, because we're going to get delivery. We're going to get delivery here in Colorado. So how does the delivery actually happen? Do you have a fleet of cars? Do your drivers use their own cars? How does it actually function?
Well, I think every delivery service does it a little bit differently. For us, because we're a small player, we have our drivers use their own cars. They, you know, keep track of mileage, and they have to have a dedicated GPS within the car. And it's all online. People order online. Or we have a lot of older ladies who don't go online. They'll just call us up on our landline and place their orders that way.
Interesting. Do they call up in those situations with questions where they're, like, looking for you to help direct them in terms of what they should buy?
Sometimes they do. We've saved some very funny messages from people. But yeah, I mean, a lot of times people are trying cannabis for the very first time. Essentially, when they call up, they'll say things like, you know, I'm having a hard time sleeping, but I really don't want to feel high. And so we'll direct them to some high CBD products that could help them with sleep. And then inevitably, we'll get a call a week or two later saying, it worked okay at first, but now I'd like something stronger and I don't care about feeling high.
Okay.
So baby like steps. Clockwork.
Mm-hmm. I love that. And what did you see as a result of the COVID pandemic? Was there an uptick of sales with you like we experienced in Illinois and I know Jim has talked about in Colorado?
Yes. So essentially at the very beginning of March, we were told that we would not be an essential service and that we would have to shut down. It was the night of St. Patrick's Day, 2020. So we had a huge sale and we went crazy and had a million deliveries. And then at about 10 p.m. on St. Patrick's Day, the city and county of San Francisco reversed and said we were indeed deemed essential. And after that, we thought things would slow down because most of our existing customers had bought a lot of things during the sale. And in fact, it remained crazy busy for most of 2020. So yes, it definitely, we saw a huge uptick.
And were there people like who would call in and, you know, specifically buying to deal with the effects or the impact of, you know, dealing with lockdown and the pandemic?
Oh, yes. And one interesting thing that happened towards the end of the year was that we onboarded a new product called CANN, C-A-N-N, which is a low-dose cannabis carbonated beverage. It comes in a little can. And they had various flavors. And we started selling boatloads of that because people felt like they were drinking too much alcohol and gaining weight and waking up hungover. And a lot of these people were parents who had kids who were doing remote learning, and it was just too hard for them. This way, they could have a drink later in the day that's only 35 calories, 2 milligrams of THC, 4 milligrams of CBD, and great flavors, and no hangover. So we started putting individual cans as gifts in people's delivery bags. Eventually, people are buying, like, you know, 4, 5, 6 packs at a time. So that was a huge thing. And every time we deliver to people, they say, this has really helped me with my anxiety, with, you know, dealing with my kids, with sleep, with not gaining any more weight during COVID. So I think that's been a big plus for people.
Awesome. Very nice.
CANN right now, I think, is 25% market share of beverages in California. So it's they've taken off like wildfire. It's been sort of the same way that like the White Claw truly revolutions happened on the alcohol side. CANN has definitely capitalized on the spiked seltzer on the cannabis side. And I think now GTI is carrying them in most markets. And now they're migrating to Canada as well. And they're actually powering a partnership with a company called Valens up in Canada as well, using their technology for microencapsulation going into other products up there.
Wow. And Rob, do you know, I've been seeing a lot about celebrity investors in CANN. Do you know anything about that?
Yeah, I know that their cap table is relatively decent, but I mean, look, there's celebrity investors now in almost any company you can think of. So it used to be everyone wanted the celebrity endorsement going into the product. Now it's behind the scenes. You know, you probably saw yesterday Chris Webber, in conjunction with Jason Weil, just announced a $100 million fund specifically to go after economic empowerment and fund, you know, minority-owned businesses. So, I mean, there's a big trend of celebrity behind the scenes putting capital into things. So it's not just on the side of putting out like a Garcia product, which, by the way, tell me if I'm crazy off base. I'm thinking about coming out with a John Mayer product that comes in like really good like bubblegum packaging and, you know, comes in like really soft colors. It's going to have half the THC and it'll taste half as good. Oh, and I'll charge twice as much for it. So do you think that would sell at your parties?
Yes, I do. As long as they're not children's parties.
Oh, my goodness. But tell us about this Garcia line of products, because, you know, I mean, it seemed like every celebrity in the world has been coming out with, you know, a line of products, and all sorts of musicians. And yet, while Mickey did admittedly come out with his line of pre-rolls, the whole world's kind of waiting for Jerry, and now it's here. So what kind of feedback are you getting from your customers on that?
We're getting great feedback on all the products. We're getting a lot of repeat customers on all the products. I think that the Mickey Hart, I forget what it was called, but his pre-rolls were very strong. That was all Chem Dog, I believe, was the strain. And it kind of had a, I don't know if they had a limited audience, but it was not the right match for our particular demographic. Mm-hmm. The Garcia products, we weren't sure if they'd be a match, but they have proven to be one. And the rep has said, she's quoted Trixie as saying that they want the whole line to be very inclusive the way that Jerry was. So to that end, they have products, they're getting their source material, their flower, from both indoor grows and outdoor grows throughout the state of California. So the eighth jars are all indoor grown, the boxes of joints are all outdoor grown, and I believe the Jerry's Picks, which is what the gummies are because they're shaped like Jerry's Picks, those are a combination of the two.
Very interesting. So, you know, premium strain, does it carry a premium price?
It does carry a premium price. So for an eighth jar, I believe we're retailing them for $55, which is, higher than average.
It is.
And still $5 less than what we pay in Illinois. So that's a good deal as far as I'm concerned. Wow. And how much interaction, like actual out in front work, has Trixie and the estate done? Have they been, accessible to people who are selling the brands and, to add publicity or anything like that? Have you been able to communicate with any of those people, or do you just work through your reps?
As a retailer, we primarily work through our reps, but we're given a lot of marketing materials that involve the whole family. So Trixie and Annabelle and Sunshine and Mountain Girl have all made videos. They've made videos together. They do a lot of behind the scenes stuff where they've created playlists to go with each strain. They've created, and that's all on their Garcia Handpicked website. So it's very easy for us to point to that and tell our customers where to go to really enhance their experiences.
I love that. That is so funny. Set lists.
Yeah, set lists to enjoy each strain by. And then there's Bertha, which is the brand's Airstream. And Bertha goes all over the country and sells Garcia Handpicked merchandise.
Like the Oscar Mayer Wienermobile?
Kinda.
Only a lot cooler.
Well, I don't know. You kind of like that Oscar Mayer Wienermobile.
That's true. When you see it on the road, you know you're going in the right direction, so that's cool too.
Exactly.
Well, that's great, and so that's wonderful to hear that business is going well. You got all your customers and everything. Garcia's online. What's next for you guys?
We are plugging along. I'm not sure what's next for us in terms of growth. We're looking at a few different options. We're always looking at new products and considering new product lines coming on. When Bertha comes back from Massachusetts later in the summer, we're planning an event with the Garcia Handpicked brand. We're not sure what that will be yet, but okay. We're planning something with her. And then nice. Once COVID restrictions ease up a bit, we've got a number of partnered events that are coming up and hoping to start doing the parties again.
Wow. Okay, well, that's exciting stuff.
Hopefully you'll do something at Red Rocks.
Well, that would be great. I'll be in Boulder in June. You know, we can't really cross state lines with Society Jane stuff, but I would love to do something at Red Rocks.
Well, that's really the next step, right? Is they're just going to have to license the Garcia products into other states and let people eventually have them elsewhere, because that's the only way the rest of us are going to be able to get our hands on it, unless we come out to California.
Well, I think they are in Massachusetts.
Yes, they are.
Oh.
And I think...
Oh, you told me that the Berthamobile was here, right?
I did. And I think they might also be in Pennsylvania. They're in several states on the East Coast. I don't know if they have plans yet for Illinois. You may want to ask them, Larry.
Till Illinois, you know, gets out of litigation and starts giving out licenses, who knows? We'll see. But eventually, it would be nice to have them.
I'm reaching out to some Colorado clients to get that here. But Andy, as I'm sure you know, Bob Weir's doing two shows at Red Rocks with the Wolf Brothers. I think it's June 4th and 5th, or right around there.
I do know that. I may be there.
Me too.
And you just saw Bob Weir. Tell us, share with us what it was like to be at Terrapin Station this last, Terrapin Crossroads, this last Sunday, ostensibly going to see Phil and friends, and little Bobby Weir walks out.
Nice segue, Larry. Yeah, it was Saturday, actually.
Saturday.
And we had tickets to Terrapin Crossroads. They're doing a really great job of putting on the outdoor shows. Phil set up a whole stage that's permanent out there. It's beautiful. It's right on the canal on a green lawn outside of the building. And they're selling tables. So you buy a 2, 4, or 6-top table, and then you have a square around it in which you can dance and move around. You can leave to go to the bar or to the bathroom, but it's very comfortable, and the tables are far apart, and it's a really lovely way to spend an afternoon. So Phil's band that day, even before Bobby showed up, was stellar. It was Phil and Graham Lesh. It was Jason Crosby on keyboards, Jackie Green on guitar, you just can't beat him, and then John Molo on drums.
Who I love, of all the drummers, I love John Molo.
Fantastic.
Great Phil and friends.
Yes. So already a fantastic band. And then right before the show started, when all the band members were on stage already, that's when Bobby showed up, and everybody went crazy. Phil yelled off the stage and said, "Bob, do you want us to start without you, or are you going to join us for the first song?" And I don't know what Bob said, but he joined them for the first song. The set list was spectacular. It was peppy. It was upbeat. Sometimes, personally, I feel like Dead & Co. is a little bit slow, but this was a very fast-paced, good energy show. So Bob played with them for the first 3 songs, and then he and his family left. And what I found out later was that he went into San Francisco, and there was a benefit happening at Fort Mason with Willie Nelson and Lucas Nelson, and Bob joined them for the evening for this benefit. So he spent the whole day being a guest star.
Quite the doubleheader. Holy cow.
What were some of the song highlights?
Oh my gosh, the song highlights. Well, you can't beat a show that starts with St. Stephen.
Right.
Then they teased the 11 a little bit in the middle of St. Stephen, but they didn't quite get there. What were the other? Uncle John's Band, huge highlight. Shakedown was amazing. The Jack Straw, Bob had left by the time they played Jack Straw, but that was a huge highlight. Let's see, Midnight Hour was amazing. All the songs were amazing. Wharf Rat, you know, Jackie Green, I'll say, he brings a unique, very young, very peppy, good juju energy to the whole thing. So I think he elevates everybody else's game. They're all fantastic musicians, but he is so positive, and he just radiates good energy, and you just can't help but respond to that. And I think if the crowd was small, because the tables are so far apart, but you could really feel the energy in the air despite that. And I think that's a kind of an amazing feat to pull off with a crowd that's so sparse.
That's cool. I agree with you about Jackie Green. I love him.
I have a Jackie Green story.
Go for it.
So the first time I saw Jackie Green was at Red Rocks. And I forget who else was playing that night. It might have been the Allman Brothers, but I was covering the show for the newspaper as a journalist, and got there early and sat down close to the first or second row at Red Rocks. And there's this band out there in the afternoon, you know, 4 or 5 o'clock, kind of warming the crowd up. And there's this young guy playing keyboards with braces on. He was so young, he had braces on. This is probably 2005, and that was Jackie Green.
Oh my God!
Wow.
I saw him play with Phil and friends in 2008 or 9 at the Riviera nightclub in Chicago, which is this tiny little nightclub about 2 miles away from Wrigley Field, and the Cubs were in the playoffs. So it pulled away just enough people that you could breathe in the Riviera nightclub. It wasn't overcrowded. And they played a long set. At the end of the night, they played a killer Help Slip Frank, and we all thought that was the end of it. And then Phil dropped a bomb and just launched right into Viola Lee Blues, and they jammed out for another half an hour after that. And the quote from Phil later on was, he had to show Jackie what it was really like when you get these, you know, Chicago crowds happen to be there, you know, up and running. We don't stop. We just keep playing into the night, you know, kind of thing. But Jackie was great. I loved him. I think he does. I think he motivates them to play at a different level.
Well, another story I heard on how that got started with Phil and Jackie Greene, and I may not have this exactly right, but Phil was sitting in his car waiting for one of his sons to come out of some event the son was at and listening to his radio, and he heard a Jackie Greene song, and he was so impressed that he looked up Jackie Greene, and that's how they got started playing together.
Okay. Rob, Bill Kreutzmann's turning 75.
Yeah, he sure is. It's exciting. And I think that, you know, it's easy when we sit on this show and we talk about highlights from other members of the band. It's pretty easy to talk about your favorite Phil bomb dropping to another one, or, you know, your favorite time that Phil dropped a bomb to open a shakedown, or, you know, your favorite Garcia licks or things that Bobby did, and, you know, super, you know, preening of Bobby on stage. But it's sometimes harder to identify what it is you really like about, you know, the drummers. And obviously, you know, it's one of the only bands where, you know, drums was different every night, but a lot of it was, you know, Mickey attributed, where, you know, he'd be on the beam or on the beast or doing other things that you could really, like, point your finger at. But sometimes you forget just how much, you know, Billy held down that band, and how creative he was, and the fact that he was the drummer that was there all along, and all the things that he's done since, and how much respect he has from the musical community, and, you know, all the young musicians that look up to him that play in Billy and the Kids. But there's so many musicians that look up to Billy as a drummer, and I think that, you know, it's time to take a little bit of time just to sort of celebrate what he's done of being, you know, one of the founding members of the band, and just unique parts of his career. And so I don't know if any of you guys have any highlights you can point to, but I've certainly got a couple teed up. But, you know, anyone have any things they remember about, you know, Kreutzmann doing something exceptional, or, you know, what it was you loved about Bill over the last, you know, 55 years of him playing, you know, Grateful Dead music?
I just thought he was fun. You know, he was always seemed, you know, kind of like the happy-go-lucky guy in the group. The story was he was always close to Garcia, and that was nice. And the story was that he was, you know, he was the driving force behind a lot of the drugs that the group wound up taking. And my story is when they did the 2002 Terrapin Family reunion at Alpine Valley, there were some of the guys who were in the group that I were there with. A lot of San Francisco crowds, so Andy probably knows them all. And one of them insisted that he was best friends with Kreutzmann, or he had some connection through to Kreutzmann, and disappeared for a while. It was an all-day affair, and then showed up right before they were coming out on stage and was running around with a vial and said, this is the acid that they're going to be dosed on. I got it from Billy. And we were all like, oh, well, if you got it from Billy, right? So, you know, everybody took a little taste to see what it was. We all had a great time, great show. Who knows? But, you know, if you could believe that that's where it really came from, then it made it that much better. And why not? He seemed like that kind of guy.
No, I've always enjoyed Billy. You know, I've heard some people say when they got the second drummer, the question was why, that they thought Billy was adequate on his own. But I've always enjoyed Mickey's thunderous drum solos, and I guess a story I heard is there was times when Mickey Hart and Kreutzmann, Billy Kreutzmann, would feel each other's pulse before going on stage, and they were totally in sync.
After that many years, it'll do it to you, right? What about you, Andy?
One of my great memories of Billy is from the Fare Thee Well concerts in Santa Clara, before they went to Chicago, and Billy on the first day, Jay Blakesburg, my photographer friend who's been on your show, was driving a golf cart around with Phil and Jill in the back, waving to the people at the Shakedown Street and all over the crowd. And the next day, Billy wanted in on the action, so Jay got the same golf cart and drove Billy around Shakedown Street and the crowd, and people were really, really excited to see him. It was very cool to see them just mingling with the rest of us.
One of the things about Bill Kreutzmann also, I think that, you know, really makes him unique is that he was always so approachable. And I know that, you know, people have ended up at his house in Hawaii. I know a friend actually ended up crashing his wedding a few years back, and he was actually really magnanimous about, you know, having people that he didn't know to show up at the wedding. He's like, yeah, sure, the more the merrier. So, you know, by all accounts, he's always been the guy that, you know, never has shied away from just kind of going out there and hanging out with the crowd. So, Andy, your story tracks really nicely against, you know, everything I've heard about him as a person. I've never met Billy. I've met a lot of the other band members over the years, but Bill always seems like, you know, probably the guy I'd want to go just hang out and have a beer with.
And Andy, correct me if I'm wrong, but at the first Obama inauguration, I believe that some version of The Dead played at one of the parties. And as I recall, our mutual friend Jack Gold was at the party and actually has a picture of him with, I think it's with Bill. And Bill's all dressed up in his formal attire that they wore to the inauguration. And our friend was saying, you know, very approachable guy, was more than happy to chat with him, take a picture with him and everything. And yeah, he does kind of seem like, you know, the guy in the group who would be fun to hang out with after the show, right? With Jerry, there's too much pressure. What the hell do you say to Jerry Garcia? I don't know. And Bobby, I always just imagined after the show was off doing his thing with his fan club, whoever that might be. And, you know, Phil had kids that he was going home to, and, you know, they all just had stuff. But there's Billy, and he's just hanging out, and he seems like, you know, he would be the guy you'd like to, you know, spend a Saturday evening with.
Sure, sure. Hey, we do have some fish news, but I have a quick Billy story to transition. And in 2007, mm-hmm. I think, is when Fish came back from hiatus and did four shows at Red Rocks. And Bill Kreutzmann sat in with them, and they did an amazing Character Zero. And Bill sat in for pretty much the whole second set.
Yep, and you pointed us to that, and I've actually checked that out on YouTube, and it's worth checking out. He's having a lot of fun up there with John Fishman, who's kind of an irreverent character himself. So I'm sure the two of them got along just fine.
But Larry, why don't you lead us into a little bit of sad news on the Fish front?
Yeah, well, since we were talking about Fish now, unfortunately this week, the Fish family lost Tony Markelis, who was a bass player extraordinaire. And for those of you old enough to understand the reference, he was to the Trey Anastasio band, which John Kahn was to the Jerry Garcia band, meaning his permanent bass player when he wasn't with Fish. This is the guy who played bass for him. And, you know, there's all sorts of quotes from Trey going around about how important he was. But Tony played with a lot of people. He wasn't just Trey's guy. He played with a number of other bands and a number of other musicians, people who have been commenting on him, you know, for the last couple of days. And, you know, for me, it just always is amazing how tight that musical community is. And, you know, we kind of think of the bands as all going off in their own directions and doing their own things. But on a certain level, you know, they're all very much aware of one another, and they all kind of, you know, somehow overflow and interact, you know, either guesting with somebody or, you know, doing something else with somebody, different projects. And Tony seemed like that kind of guy who just was kind of everywhere. And Jim, I think, as you noted, he was tied in enough to the Fish family itself that he actually co-wrote some of the Fish tunes, Gotta Jaboo, I think, and you had mentioned First Tube earlier. And Sand, yeah. So, you know, I mean, that's no small feat to be, you know, to be get composing credits, or at least partial composing credits, for some of the biggest Fish tunes out there. So I know that for my Fish friends, it's a big loss.
It is. And many of us got to see him recently when, during the pandemic last fall, Trey did some Broadway shows with the band, and Tony was the bass player.
Right. That his series of shows from the Beacon, correct. And he had Tony out there with him playing every night. And he's just an amazing talent. He was a young guy, relatively speaking, I think just in his mid-50s. So since that's younger than me, he is a young guy. It's a shame. And, you know, I guess that's just the, you know, part of rock and roll, right? That one by one, these guys all do die on us. And then there's Phil, who's still out there playing at 80 years old. So, you know, I mean, we take the good where we can get it and everything else. But on the good news on the Fish side is that Trey has announced that he's going to play three shows in June live at SPAC, Saratoga Springs Performing Arts Center in New York. As an aside, a favorite Dead shed where I never managed to go see them, unfortunately, or I never saw Fish there either, but I always heard great things about that place. But what I didn't realize is that although He is a University of Michigan graduate, go blue. Tony Markellis had moved and was living in Saratoga Springs. So I'm just wondering whether that's Trey's way of paying tribute to him by announcing the shows in Saratoga Springs, or whether that had already been predetermined. I don't know. But he will, he'll be playing three live shows there. So for people who have been itching to see Trey live, you'll finally have your chance if you can make your way to New York State and see him there. Rob, did you ever make it to Saratoga Springs?
Yeah, I love SPAC. It's a great venue. It's a lot of fun. It's super easy to get to from New York City. It's about 2 hours away. So it's one of those places where everyone felt like they were going upstate. But really, you know, an easy venue to get to with great sound. Really similar to Deer Creek in a lot of ways.
I've been to Saratoga Springs to see fish.
Oh, you saw fish there. Okay, I know that for the fish fans, it's one of their favorite places.
Yes, it was a Father's Day weekend. I call it the Father's Day Massacre because my younger or older son, Jack, almost got arrested going into SPAC. It was a sobriety checkpoint going into SPAC. We had brunch, and we had a couple drinks with brunch, and I said, you're driving, Jack, but don't have another drink. And I saved his butt because they breathalyzed him, and he blew just under, and the cop just threw the stick down on the ground and said, you can go. So all you people going to SPAC, make sure your driver is sober going into SPAC.
Very kind of the cops to do it on the way in. I got to give them a little bit of credit to say, you know, much harder to do it on the way out. So good for them. For
well, and since you mentioned Deer Creek, that was a trap for the unwary for many, many people. Deer Creek, I believe, was the one where they actually took a trailer and just set it up in the parking lot so they could have immediate court hearings and just process it as quickly as they could write the tickets.
Oh, wow. Larry, I'll give you a story from Deer Creek. There's all the campgrounds that were surrounding it where you never had to get back on the highway. You could just drive the back roads to the campgrounds. I had a U-Haul truck one time at Deer Creek that I put about 25 Wookiees in the back of with a nitrous tank, a keg, and a, you know, handful of Sammy Smith big boys. And I get pulled into the campground, and right as I did, you heard this huge crash in the back of the U-Haul, and someone had knocked over the nitrous tank, and it was just spraying everywhere. It was just freezing everything in the place, this cloud. And there was a cop and a security guard for the KOA campground. They're like, would you mind opening the back of this thing? So I open up the back of it, and it's literally this cloud of nitrous with, like, you know, a bunch of people holding Sammy Smith's tall boy, like oatmeal stouts and nut browns. The cop looks at me dead in the eye and goes, that's just too much paperwork. Closes the thing up, pretends he hasn't seen it, and lets me in. It was one of the great, like, I was looking at him like, this is the most absurd thing this cop has probably ever seen. A bunch of dreadies like, hey! You know, he's like, just go. Just get in there.
Okay. That's all good fun. Really quickly, one other thing, Jim, you had mentioned at the top of the show, Dick's Picks 38 is out. Your thoughts on that?
Yes, I got to listen to that extensively over the weekend. Very much enjoyed it. Got to read all the liner notes. And what's interesting about those shows of, I believe it's September of 73, is it was right at the time when Wake of the Flood was either just come out or had coming out shortly thereafter. So many of the Deadheads were hearing songs like Eyes of the World for the very first time.
Well, and not only that, Dave Lemieux, when he was talking about it, he said the reason they picked the show was it was one of Phil's favorite, not Phil, Dick Lavatla's favorites. And one of the reasons why they liked it so much was, you just said it yourself, they had discovered over time that tours immediately following studio sessions tended to be much better because the band was very tight from the studio sessions and they could kind of carry it over onto the tour. And this is really, I have to say, in terms of, you know, the amount of music they're giving us on these things, because you don't just get the entire 9-8 show on that album. They throw on a Birdsong and a Playin' from the night before, and the Birdsong, I think, is the best of them all. But then if you got the bonus disc for the guys like me who still subscribe after all these years, you get like another hour's worth of the day before. I mean, it's just two tremendous shows from one of their favorite venues in the New York area. And it's the other thing that I really like about it is it's within a reasonable shouting distance of the Skull and Roses shows, right? So the version of Bertha that they play to open it is very similar to the Skull and Roses Bertha, but even better at the end of the show, just like on the, I think it's on side four of Skull and Roses, is the Not Fade Away Going Down the Road, Not Fade Away jam, which again is just, you know, they just play their butts off. It's really, really And then after that, they still fall into Stella Blue. So, you know, I mean, it's well worth it. It's a great album, a great time period. Go listen to it.
I see why so many sophisticated deadheads like that 1973 era.
Yeah, you know, look, it's no coincidence. They had been doing a lot of recording, and, you know, they came out, and they were at the top of their game, and they just killed it. It was a good year for them. Okay, guys, I think we are running out of time. Andy, before we go, I forgot to ask you this before. How do people who are interested in hearing more about Society Jane, or if they live in the appropriate area ordering from you, get in touch with you?
Well, Larry, I'm glad you asked. They can go to our website, which is societyjane.com. And they can also look us up on Instagram, where we are at Society Jane Fun.
Okay. Very good. So people who want to get in on the game and enjoy it, that's the place to go if you're in the Bay Area or the nearabouts. Thank you again, Andy, for joining us again. It's a pleasure to have you back, and appreciate your time and all the good things you had to share. Rob Hunt, any words of parting for our audience?
Just excited to have another fun show next week with our guest Alex Beard, who's joining us from New Orleans. So that should be a really fun show. So make sure you tune in for that. And Andy, thanks so much for joining us this week. That was a lot of fun.
It's great to be here again. I'll do it anytime.
Well, thank you very much. And next week, I will not be here because I'll be on vacation. But when I get back, I want to give you folks an update on the 80th anniversary of Red Rocks. It was very fun. And then I also want to I'll be able to give a review of the psychedelic conference in Denver that I'm going to on Friday.
Oh, very nice. Tagging onto our show from last week with Noah Potter and his psychedelic law practice. It seemed like after our show aired, there seemed to be a lot of articles popping up all of a sudden about it. So, you know, maybe we're just slightly ahead of the game. Or at least like to think so, at least. Well, Jim, we'll miss you next week. Safe travels. And so for everyone, this is Larry Mishkin. Thank you again for listening to the Deadhead Cannabis Show. We will look forward to seeing you next week. Enjoy your cannabis responsibly. And?
And Jim, at the psychedelics conference, there's your chance to eat more acid.
Okay. Wonderful. Thanks, everyone. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to today's show. To check out more great cannabis podcasts, go to podconnects.com. Here's a preview of one of our other shows.
Hey everyone, it's Ryan from the Cannabis Connoisseur podcast. If you're looking for ways to utilize cannabis to keep you healthy, strong, and sharp, come join us every Wednesday where we dive into the best ways to use cannabis to optimize your life. Topics include cannabis and athletics, cannabis for productivity, cannabis for anxiety, cannabis for a healthy immune system, and so much more. If you're a curious connoisseur, this show is for you. So please head over to our page, and we're looking forward to seeing you this week. Bye.